Okay, I want to, today we're going to talk about how Jews looked at Christianity and over time. But before we do that, I want to, I want to fine tune something I said last week. It is a fact that the overall thrust of Paul's theology was that once Jesus had come and the Torah had been transferred to the Christians and the Jews had lost their ability for salvation, that in fact, based on those statements, basically in his letters to the Galatians, that Jews have disappeared and we just don't cooperate. There are places in Paul's writings where he seems to say that, you know, that the remnant of Israel will convert, and that as a result, maybe Jews still have some kind of a positive role to play, and that may anticipate what we said about Augustine, that you end up Jews serve a positive purpose. Over time, the first line of thought was much more important than the second. It's important. The fact that this tension in Paul is crucial for understanding Paul, but not so crucial for understanding how the church fathers and leaders saw the Jews. The Jews continued to be a problem, and we talked about that. I will mention, by the way, just in passing, as it's actually interesting. One of the reasons why the leaders of the church in the formative period, in the 3rd, 4th, 5th century, even after the empire became Christian, emphasized more and more how bad the Jews are and how they have no hope for salvation and how the traditional understanding of the Bible is no longer valid, the literal meaning of the Bible is no longer valid, and so on, is that might have been the original Christian line. But the average Christian didn't really get it. Like, Jesus was a Jew, and why don't we do what he did, right? Mm-hmm. And it comes to a very interesting expression, which had a direct impact on Jews in the middle of the 4th century. The most important holiday in the Christian calendar is Easter, not Christmas. Because the Christian religion is all about Jesus' death and its significance, not about his birth. I mean, his birth's important, but it's not as important. Easter is the solemn holiday. That's why you have a week before, and sort of like you have, Shlosh Nisim HaGdolah. You start with Palm Sunday, and then you have Good Friday, and Holy Saturday, and then you have Easter Sunday. So,
40 days before.
And 40 days before. It's a whole to-do. Okay. If you read the New Testament, it's clear that the crucifixion was either on Pesach or Erev Pesach, and that 2 days later was the resurrection, was Easter. So how does the average Christian throughout the Middle East know when Easter is? You ask the Jew. You see the Jew's running around. He's cleaning his house. He's making his matzahs. You ask him when is Pesach? Pesach is whatever, and then I know 2 days later is Easter. That was an absolutely intolerable situation as far as the church was concerned, because it emphasized the Jewish connection of Christianity and B, made Christian observance dependent on Jews. Now, up until the middle of the 4th century, don't forget, there was no calendar. It's not like, you go into, we were kids, we had the butcher shop, which usually the funeral home was the one that gave you, I don't know why. Time is running out. I'm not quite clear what that is. But listen, a very dear friend of mine is the manager, general manager of one of the major funeral homes in New York. But anyways, and he gives out calendars. But anyways, the way you knew when Yom Tov was because the Sanhedrin were the best in the Gadol was sitting in the Galilee at this point, and witnesses come and they testify that they didn't see the supermoon, which I didn't think was anything really to write home about. There wasn't a supermoon, they see the new moon. And then they would declare Mekudesh, and they would send out runners to the Gola, to whatever. Okay. So that's how you knew when Yom Tov was. So in order to prevent the Christians from... So the first thing that the church did at the Council of Nicaea was to reschedule Easter. Easter is no longer 2 days after the Jewish Passover. It is now, 2 days after Pesach for our purposes. but rather it is now the second Sunday after the vernal equinox, which is when it is observed to this day. But, you know, you can say all you want, but the changing the date after hundreds of years of practice is not easy. And Christians still kept asking Jews, when is Passover? So in order to be able to make sure that Christians will only accept the new date, the government passed a rule that the Jews are no longer allowed to send out the runners to notify when the Chagim were. Now that's already a business. Because if they can't be Mekadesh the Chodesh, that way the calendar will collapse and there's no Jew. I mean, there's really, without the calendar may be more important than many more serious mitzvahs. The late Professor Yaakov Katz once noted that schism comes to the Jewish people either over the calendar or over Jewish status, who is a Jew. The Karaites started, their schism started over the, among other things, over the calendar. In any event, That's what prompted Hillel II to publicize the mathematical equation by which one calculates the calendar so that people will know when Yontif is. Which raised an interesting question. Up until then, there was one plus or minus 1 day lag in the messengers getting to the Gola, to the farthest parts of Gola, which is the reason why there was Yontif Sheni Shel Galios. The question then became, so what now? Now we have a mathematical way of calculating it. So the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Dalet Amud Beis, has a passage which actually comes from exactly that moment in time. The Gemara says as follows. Okay. Gemara says as follows. Ditnan. There's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. Barishona hayumasiyim masuos. They actually used to use torches. But then the Samaritans messed things up and used to send up signals even when there wasn't Yontif. Hiskinushu shluchim yotzim. Okay? And then instead they went over to messengers. So then the question is, today we know exactly how to calculate the holidays. The Adina Mekviya Diyarcha, my time Adina Trey Yomi. Why in the Golad do they still keep 2 days? Mishum deshalchu mitam. While this was going on, the question came to Eretz Yisrael from the Gola. What do we do now that we know how to calculate the calendar? Said the Sanhedrin, Hizaru b'minhag avoseichem b'deichem. Keep the original custom of 2 days. Zimnin de gazru amalchus gezera v'asi l'alkilkule. Sometimes you can't know what government policy is going to be. Sometimes they'll allow us to have the shluchim. Sometimes they won't allow us to have the shluchim. And as a result, if they actually let us go back to the situation, we're going to go back to the shluchim. You'll still have a one plus or minus day lag, and things will get messed up. So keep things as they are. That exchange clearly comes during the time between the promulgation of the Gezeira against sending out the messengers and the attempts to, obviously, what did Jews do? You smear the government and try to get them to change their minds and to see whether we could actually undo that, because it's always better to rely on witnesses and whatever. Now, then the question is, what's the status of Yontif Sheni Bizman Hazeh? It's a minig, was it legislated? That's already a business among the Rishonim. But the point is that here you have a situation in which the attempt to separate Christians from Jews was not hurt or affected Judaism as it functions, not because it was intended as an anti-Jewish per se matter, but in order to maintain the integrity of Christianity as a separate religion. So sometimes it cuts both ways. I'm not saying that they were full of love of Jews or Judaism, but that wasn't the original intention. It was it was an anti-defamation league thing. It was a self-defense kind of thing. Now they have to excuse me. Did we talk about the Birkat Aminim and the expulsion of the Christians? Okay. So what we're going to have to... So did you bring the sheets from last week?
Yeah.
Okay, so I borrowed from somebody because I, among the things I forgot was this. Okay, yes, sir. So go to... All right. So go to... Look on this sheet. Number three. Certainly up until the time of the destruction of the temple, Jews and Christians, certainly Jewish Christians, okay, certainly Jewish Christians were part of the general Jewish surroundings. They were part of the furniture. And over time, relations became difficult because those Christians... First of all, refused to fight in the war against Rome because it had messianic tenor. Probably, there's no question that's in my mind, anyways, that a lot of these Jewish Christians, as Jesus failed to come back, sort of adumbrated their belief in him, and the idea that you could become that he could become God sort of began to penetrate as Paul's influence increased. Look at, I mentioned last week, the fact that there are people who think that Lubavitcher Rebbe is also God. It's a natural kind of thing born out of the frustration of waiting. An indication of where things stood in the 30, 40 years after the destruction of the temple is actually found in the Medrash. This story is up in a number of places. It's actually most famous for appearing in the Gemara. The version that's in Kohelet Rabbah I like better. I think it's more authentic. I think it's fuller. Take a look at it, starting in the middle of the page. Maaseh b'Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, one of the leading disciples of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, shenitfas l'shum minut. He was arrested by the Romans for being on suspicion of being a Christian. Domitian, the brother of Titus, was, aside from being not such a nice guy, was also paranoid, and he undertook a very serious anti-Christian persecution in the 90s. And Rabbi Eliezer was arrested l'shum minut. By the way, that's classic Palestinian, or not Palestinian, you know, Eretz Israeli Mishnaic Hebrew. Shum is shame, l'shem minut, or under the accusation of minut. That's what we have in the Haggadah. Matzah zo she'anu ochlim al shum ma. Al shame ma. That's more proper. Okay, so anyway, so he was arrested. Nitalo oto hegmon. He was brought before the the judge.
Number three.
Okay. So he was arrested by the and he brought before this judge. Hegmon, by the way, in medieval Hebrew is a bishop. It comes from the word hegmonia, power. Basically, because the bishops took over the municipal powers in Rome as the empire collapsed, so the term sort of was transferred. But here, hegmon simply means a judge or a person in authority. V'helu et al habimaladuno. So they put him in the dock. Amarlo. So this judge says to him, Rebbe, Master, Adam gadol kamotcha yasok b'dvarim b'telim halalu. I can't imagine that you, as distinguished leader of Jewish people, who was an older man already, would mess around with such stupid things as Christianity. So Rabbi Eliezer said, Ne'man alai hadayan. The judge, is ne'man alai, that can testify that that's true. V'hu savar, and the judge thought that he was actually complimenting him, Shebishvi lo amar. V'hu lo amar, the Rabbi Eliezer was talking about, Ne'man alai adayan, God is my witness. But he said it in a way that could actually be seen as sort of buttering up the judge. Amar lo, he was very flattered. Me'achar she'hemantani alecha, since you have accepted my credibility. Afani ayiti savur v'omer, that's what I thought also. Efshar shishivot alalu tuot hen b'dvarim b'telim alalu, do really all of your academies, you have the error of being Christians? Clearly not. Demos paturata, you're free. Demos is Greek, you're free. Achar sheniftar, after he was acquitted, doesn't mean after he died. Shiniftar, Rebbe Eliezer min Abima, he went down from the dock. Hayah mitzta'er, shinitfasel de reminut, what did I ever do that would ever arouse somebody's suspicion? By the way, one of the things Domitian was big on was what's called delators. Delators, delatores were spies. You would actually turn somebody, malshinim, informers, who would turn a guy into the government, and then you would split 50-50 his He has a state with the government. Now, the truth of the matter is that they're doing it if they were smart, you know. These guys wouldn't do that because, you know, often the government's 50% included your 50%, and you, but, you know, anyway. And so anyway, so somebody told him, what did I do that aroused suspicion? Nichnasu told me David slowly, nachamo velo kibel. They try, all the students came in to try to make him feel better, lo halach. Nichnas Rabbi Akiva etzlo. Rabbi Akiva asked, came in and asked him, Amarle Rabbi, Shema echad min aminim amar lefanecha davar v'arav lefanecha. Maybe you had a conversation, an encounter with a Jewish Christian who said something that you liked, and then that's the reason. Amar la wo, hashamayim hiskartani. You, now you remind me. Pam achat hayiti holecha bistarta shel tzipori. Tzipori, I assume you've all been to, you've seen the Mona Lisa of the Galilee. Tzipori was a mixed city, Jewish Christians, Jews, that's where Rabbi Yehuda Nasi finished the Mishnah, and also pagans. So he and it was a city that survived the Great Revolt because it actually surrendered to the Romans, surrendered to Vespasian. So anyways, I was walking around in Tzipori, Ubay Laya Damechad, and a guy came up to me, V'Yakov Ish Kfar Sachnayashmo. His name was Yaakov of Sachnin. Sachnin was a Jewish town at the time. V'Amali Davar Echad Mishum Ploni. And he told me a Dvar Torah, he told me a Vort in the name of somebody, in the manuscript of Tosefta, where this appears as well, is Yeshua ben Panteri. So you shouldn't, if you have any question who this was, he told me a vort, and, you know, Jesus, paskind, or he gave this Dvar Torah. V'hinani hadavar, v'hinani, I liked it, was a good vort, it was a good shot. I'm going to, and then the question is, there's a whole question of whether you can use the hire of a harlot or the price of a god, a dog, which you're not allowed to use for korbanos, to build an outhouse for the kohen gadol. Sort of like a very, you know, whatever. We'll skip a little bit. All right. Baloto davar, skip down to the middle. Aloto davar nitpasti l'shuminot. That's why, because somebody saw me and I enjoyed it and I got hanar from apikorsis, from heresy. That's why I was arrested. Tells you something about the walls having ears. It tells you something, but it also tells something else. It tells you that Tzira Yaakov is Sachnin, that these Jewish Christians were still, in many ways, still they were still part of the framework, part of the texture, part of the fabric of Jewish society. They were still speaking the same wavelength as Tanaim and Omerim. They're exchanging Vortlech and Haloche. By the way, this is an indirect confirmation of the fact that Jesus was like that also, right? Because, I mean, as opposed to the Pauline idea that Jesus was out to destroy, to annul the Torah, as we saw, this is sort of like preserving a vort of Jesus that fits better in a Jewish context. And then he says, V'lo'od, not only was I arrested, She'avarti al ma she'katub ba'Torah, Harchek alecha darkecha, V'al tikrav al petach beitecha, Harchek me'alecha, me'alea derech zuminus, V'al tikrav al petach beisa zuznus, and so on and so forth. He says, so I should have actually kept my existence, but you see that they're still, these Jewish Christians are still part of the
Also, if you refuse to speak to them, then they could inform even worse.
Well, the question is, who did the informing? It's not clear. I mean, he had this conversation with Yaakov Yisachdin, who we'll see was sort of like a man around town in the Jewish community, even though he was identifiably Jewish Christian. So do we see Rabbi Lezer had, you know, mixed feelings about it. He knew very well who this guy was. He said, this is a vort that Jesus gave us. All right. The second part of the matter is, tells us the other side of the story. Mikan hayamet Rebbe Lezer ben Dama ben Achotel shel Rabbi Yishmael. Rebbe Lezer ben Dama was the nephew of Rabbi Yishmael. He pops up in different places. He also had a very broad secular education. In the Gemara of Menachos, he asked his uncle Rabbi Yishmael, can I study secular studies, Chochmat Yivanit, now that I know Kol HaTorah Kula? That's another whole discussion. And anyways, this Elazar ben Dama was bit by a snake. Uba Yaakov Yisachnaya Lerapoto, and Rabbi Yaakov Yisachnaya was in the area, he came to heal him, Bishum Ploni, in the name of Jesus, just as Jesus used to be a popular healer, so he was using his name, like Lahavdil Elef Avdol, it's like a Baal Shem. Okay? V'loi Nicho Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishmael said, no! You can't use Jesus' name to heal anybody. Amar Einata Rashai Ben Dama. Amar Lo, so Rabbi Ben Dama said, I'm going to die. Hanachli, let me alone. Vanievi lecharaya min haTorah shu mutter. I'll prove to you that I'm allowed to do this, to be cured in the name of Jesus. Velo speak lahavilo raaya ad shemet. Meanwhile, Rabban Ben Dama dies. V'samach Rabbi Yishmael v'amar Ashrecha ben Dama sheyatzta nishmatcha b'tahara v'lo paratzta gidran shel chachamim k'shekol mi sheperetz gidran shel chachamim sofa purinut ba'ot alor v'peretz geder yishchenu nachash. Apparently he'd already been peretz geder because he was bit by a snake. But the point is that if in fact, what's the debate over here? What is the status of Christianity? If Christianity is idolatry, there's no pikuach nefesh for idolatry. If it's not, that's a matter of debate. That's a matter of debate. There's no question. We'll see in the next sheets that Rabbi Shmuel was absolutely 100% convinced that Christianity was idolatry, and therefore he took this position. Now it's interesting in this regard because Rabbi Shmuel actually is the one. Are you ready for this? Who actually says that there's no Kiddush Hashem in private? So you put the three together, it's very strange. So apparently he thought that this was a specifically unique case, maybe because it was a Avodah Zarah that was growing, that he felt had to be eradicated from within the Jewish people. Possible. But, you know, it's speculation. So in the year 90 or so, you're talking about a situation in which there is a lot of interaction, but there are very clear signs that among Chazal, among the Tanaim, that they want these people out because they're over the Avodah Zarah. What did we say the definition of Avodah Zarah is? Definition of Avodah Zarah is the best one I know is that of Rebbe Professor David Berger, to attribute divinity to that which is not divine. Which means that idolatry is actually a subset. But if you attribute divinity to a person, even if you don't make a picture of them, then in fact that's by definition idolatry. Lo yelecha elohim achirim al panai, that's idolatry. That circumstance apparently motivated Rabbi Gamliel, who at the time was the head of the Sanhedrin in Yavne, to decide to start the process to drive the Jewish Christians out of Judaism. This does not affect the Goyim, only the Jews. Okay, there's a debate among historians to what degree did this event have a long-term effect, because we see that it's not so easy to, because we talk about families and, you know, larger, you know, extended clans and stuff. But it starts here around the year 9100. The story is preserved in the Bavli. There's a Yerushalmi version too. Tana Rabbanan. Shimona Pakuli. There's a guy, Shimona Pakuli, his dear Shimon Esrei Brachot Lifnei Rabban Gamliel Aseder B'Yavne. He reorganized or formulated the Shimon Esrei in a more authoritative fashion in Yavne. Amar Lehem Rabban Gamliel, when he was finished, Lachachamim, Klum Yesh Adam Shiodea L'Taken Birkat Haminim. Does anybody know how to, and the question is, what does L'Taken mean? L'Taken can mean to correct or improve or to ordain. Okay, right. So there are reasons to think kacha v'kacha. The question is, was Birkat Haminim, was that bracha in Shmon Esrei, which is invectives against heretics and informers and traitors, was it always part of Shmon Esrei or not? I don't want to go into that right now. The Eretz Yisraeli tradition was that it was always there, and the Bavli tradition was that it was not, that this is a new bracha. It really is not that important for us at the moment. Amad Shmuel HaKatan V'tikna. So Shmuel HaKatan was a member of the Beit Din, the Beit Midrash there, and he did whatever he had to do. The Shana Acheret, when they also got together again, he dav mincha, went to the Amud, he forgot it. V'shkif b'shtayim v'shalosh sha'ot v'lo helu, and he sat there for a long time, and they didn't send him away. What was the problem? Amai lo helu, why didn't they ask another chazan to take over? Amar Rav Yehud, Amar Rav, ta'a b'chol ha'brachot kulan ein ma'alin oto b'virkat ha'minim ma'alin oto. If a guy makes a mistake, this is before their sidurin, in the brachas, then you let him, you know, you let him funf through and do your best. But if you make a mistake in Birkat Haminim, you have to immediately get rid of it. Why? Chashin and Shem Aminu, because maybe the reason why he couldn't say that bracha is because he himself is cursing himself. And that was the idea, that if you include this in the Torah, in the service, then the Judeo-Christians won't come anymore. So Mar says, Shani Shmuel HaKatan Deyutikna, he was above reproach because he was the one that invented it. What was in this bracha? Look at number 5. The Birkat Haminim is probably one of the most censored brachas in the liturgy. A very fine scholar, Professor Ruth Langer, who's married to Professor Jonathan Sarna, who's also well known, wrote a wonderful book about it called Cursing the Christians. But we know from the early it's an interesting book. And she is really a first-rate scholar of liturgy. In any event, she in the Cairo Geniza, we have a number of versions of this bracha. Take a look what the one in one of them is. La mishum adim al tehi tikva umalchut zadon meherat teaker o teaker v'hanotzrim v'haminim berega yovedu. So you see that the word Christian is included, Nazarenes included in the text. Yimachu misefer chayim vim tzadikim al yikatevu baruch at Hashem. We have shover vim machnia zedim. This version has machnia zedim. The point is that what was included. Now we have Christians and Jews having relations into the 3rd century, but this is the beginning of the separation between the two.
From the Cairo Geniza.
It's probably, look at most of the Cairo Geniza materials from the period of the Gaonim. So you're talking, I don't know, you know, 8th century, 9th century. Okay. Look at the word Christian is only going to start getting taken out when the Christians start. I mean, the Muslims don't care, right? So it starts being a function of Christian attention in the early 13th century, when the Christians are aware of the oral law and they start taking a look at Jewish liturgy and they start learning Hebrew, that's when it becomes an issue. No, I don't think we need to start whatever. No, for obvious reasons, right? By the way, you don't have an aleinu shehem ishtachabim lehevav arikim et palim leyoshia. That line was restored to the Siddur in Israel. In the Israeli Siddur, because you don't have to censor in a sovereign Jewish state. But that's a whole other topic. I'm spending the entire second semester on teaching this at Bar Ilan. And the whole question of censorship and names and stuff like that. I mean, in many tshuvas, for example, just for funsies, I'll tell you, you find that instead of saying Christians or Ovdei Avodah Zarah or Akum or Nochrim or Goy, they say Canaanim. So you'd be surprised how many Canaanites were living in 16th century Italy that Jews had Jews did business with. All right. Anyways, another indication of the kind of action that was taken to separate Jews and Christians is in number 6. The Tosefta in Masechet Chulin, where one of the versions of the story about Rebbe Lezer also appears, goes as follows. Basar shenimtza biyad goy. If you find, if a goy has meat in his possession, mutar bahana'a, you can sell it, you can trade in it, or you can give it to your dog. Trading in it's a problem. Biyad hamin, however, it's in the hands of a Judeo-Christian, asur bahana'a. You can't have anything from it. Hayotzei mibevit avodah zarah, anything which is carried out of the temple of Athena or whatever. Hareza basar zivchei metim, mipnei sha'amru. And saying you can't do anything with that either. Shchita tamin avodah zara, okay. Pitan pat akum v'yenan yenesach v'hiroseim tvolim v'sifrem sifrei kosmim v'neim mamzerim. What mamzerim? The base of avodah zara here is not base of avodah zara. Base of avodah zara is actually beit haminim. Anything comes out of a Jewish Judeo-Christian church, okay. His shchita is no good. His pot is aser. His yayin is yenesach. You can't trust that they're mafris, trumas, and maestris. Their sifrei Torah and their books are banned, and their children are mamzer. That's how you keep. But this is a process. This process took time. It took over time, but it starts here. And the process began because of the fact that these Jewish Christians really became bigger, more and more Christian than Jews in terms of their theology. The idea that you can run Jews out of town based on belief is totally politically incorrect. That's how it works. That's what government is doing. But it's not politically correct today. Okay. What? That's who he believes. The person is Shomer Shabbos. Yeah, these guys were Shomer Shabbos. They were kosher. Otherwise, if they weren't shechting, you wouldn't have to say their shechita is no good. If they weren't baking pas Yisrael, you wouldn't say their pas is pasakum. If they weren't making wine in Altaris HaKodesh, then you wouldn't win. And if they weren't mafshas shumas and maestras, you wouldn't have to say that their hafrasha is no good. Clearly, the point is to invert what they're doing because their theological orientation was so unacceptable that there's no place for them within the community. So the idea of I'm not trying to polemicize here, I'm just trying to point the contrast in terms of the texture of the way the community works. The idea of orthoprax is the categorical opposite of this Tosefta. Yes, you had a question.
Yeah. So what did they do differently than
Okay, the question is, what did they do differently than the real Jews? Number one, first of all, they probably went to Christian meetings and they went to the love feast where they would have a tish and tell stories about Jesus and stuff like that. Maybe they took Mass. More importantly, they attributed divinity to Jesus.
Right,
exactly. That's why you had to go to the extreme, because it's hard to make the distinction. And I don't, and I can't, you know, it's speculation. I have to assume that it wasn't real. I have to assume that Chazal, who were doing this, took a lot of flack from the average Jew on this point. Okay. All right, that is, and to me, the truth of the matter is that these are the. I think they're the tragedy of the whole story.
Do we have any records in the Gemara about the actual life of Yoshka when he was alive?
We do. We have. There are references to Jesus' life in the Gemara. I just don't have time to go into them. One of the stories I brought is a story that they claim refers to the crucifixion. If I do that, I won't get to Islam at all. So there are some question as to.
I'm just wondering about the whole foundation is that all my childhood I was being told in New York that I was guilty, because that's what the kids, my neighbors, were being taught in catechism.
Oh, that's for sure. The New Testament has it that in the north part of Harabayat is the Alla Maria school, which is the on the site of the Antonia fortress, which according to some opinions. According to so many Christian traditions, where the trial of Jesus took place. There are others who think it took place in what's now being Dal David. And that there were Jews in the courtyard screaming, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him, and Pilate, the nice guy who had already killed tens of thousands of Jews and was withdrawn by the Roman government for overdoing it, you know, like you can kill, there's only so many Jews you can kill, right? Well, it can get worse, right? He said, no, he didn't do anything wrong. And the Jews say, his blood be upon us and upon our children forever, period. And that line is the reason why Jews are Christ killers in every generation. Okay? Of course, there's a famous story about Professor David Flusser, who was really the world's expert on Jewish Christianity and in the relationship between Christianity and Judaism, for many years a professor at Hebrew University, a very outrageous person who I knew because he sat like two seats away from me in Shul at Chol Beit Zion in Yerushalayim. So he was notorious. I mean, he has to act out all over the place. So he was notorious for starting his classes at the university with something like, "Ayesh kan lo Yehudim, Yofi." אז אני רוצה כבר לסדר את זה ולענות על התשובה המתבקשת. עשינו את זה, ואם הייתה ניתנת לנו שוב או ההזדמנות, היינו עושים את זה שוב. Okay, עכשיו נתחיל. That was his
how he started. He was a Navi Shekhar, so
right. Okay, so let's go further. But so I feel bad for these. So the thing is, I feel bad for these Jewish Christians, because these are the original Christians. These are original Talmidim and Talmidei Talmidim of Jesus. And in the end, they ended up with nothing. They get thrown out of Judaism for being Jewish people, for being Christians and for worshiping Obdei Avodah Zarah, and they were thrown out of the Christian religion because they kept keeping mitzvahs. Don't forget, according to Paul, if you keep doing mitzvahs, it has no value to it. On the contrary, it's like locking the stable after the horses are out. And the contrary, later on, Christians who follow Jewish practices are sinners. That's a sin called Yudizare, to Judaize. So they just like it's a sad story. Okay. The question is, okay, so they're no longer a funkcia. And by the way, even the Messianic Jews today, this is not they. They do Jewish stuff and whatever, but the bottom of the end of the day, they don't think you have to be Jewish and Christian. They sort of add Jewish elements to a fundamentally Pauline classical Christian theology. All right. The question is, what is the Jewish view of Christianity as it developed as a non-Jewish religion? Okay. So here, clearly Rabbi Yishmael thought it was. I'm going to keep saying Avodah Zarah because it's more than idolatry. And that was the opinion that was laid out, that was accepted by the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Tet, Halacha Dalet, Hanotzrim Ovdei Avodah Zarah Heim V'Yom Rishon Hu Yom Eidam. Okay, it So Yanta, and Rabbi Shmuel was the one who said that Sunday is a day of Avodah Zarah. Now the Mishnah says at the beginning of Avodah Zarah that if that's 3 days before a holiday of Avodah Zarah, you can't do business with non-Jews. Why? Because they will go and either, well, there's all kinds of reasons. Maybe you'll cause them to go worship, the deal will be good, maybe you'll sell them stuff that they'll use in their worship. There are various ways of going about the I'm learning about the first parak of Avodah Zarah with my son, and we're, you know, and there's all kinds of variables that go into these considerations, but the idea is you keep away. Okay? Now, there is a list of holidays in the Mishnah that this applies to. They're all Roman holidays, and Rabbi Shmuel jumps in on Davayin and Beis and said, by the way, Sunday is always awesome. Now, this could be problematic because 3 days before, 3 days before, and there were some who say 3 days afterwards. So 3 days before, 3 days afterwards, and the day obviously is usher, so, you know, then you just don't do business. Now the truth of the matter is that in a world where there are lots of pagans, no, okay, so you won't do business with Christians. It's not so terrible. We don't paskin like that anyways, but it's clear that the Gemara's take on Christianity that it is a Avodah Zarah. Lefichach, says the Rambam, Asur latet v'laseti mahem be'eretz Yisrael yom chamishi v'shishi shebechol Shabbat v'Shabbat ve'ein tzarech lomar yom rishon atzmo shu asur b'chol makom v'chein noagim mahem b'chol eidehem, Christmas, Easter, whatever the case might be. In Chutz La'aretz, Chazal, a funny observation that Goyim in Chutz La'aretz are not that frum, and therefore it's only Asur on their Yontif. Okay? Now, and that's across the board. And that is really the classical upshot of the Bavli's take on Avodah Zarah, on Christianity. What? Edom are holidays. Now, Eid in Hebrew is a disaster. Eid in Hebrew is a disaster. However, the word really comes from, you know, the Arab words are Eid al-Fitr, Eid al-Adha, it means a holiday. But later on, in the Bavli, they say it's aid with an ayin or aid with an aleph. Aid, it's their source of disaster, or aid, it's going to give testimony to God at the end of the days that they worship the Avodah Zarah. The whole first long sugi in the Avodah Zarah is about that. But it really isn't from the word eid, which means holiday. That doesn't mean, by the way, that Christianity has no value. In the censored version of the Rambam, which I've brought you here, the Rambam, this is Hilchas Malachim, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Dalet. The Rambam attributes a positive historical function to Christianity, and we'll see in Islam, to Islam. Af Yeshua HaNotzri, he says, Shedimashi Hiyeh Mashiach, he imagined that he was the Messiah. V'ne'erag Bevetin, which is part of this Jewish version of the Passion. Kvar nitnabe bo Daniel, Shenemar, Uvenei paritzei amcha yinasu lahasig la'amid kashchazon v'nichshalu. The wild members, the crazy people among the fanatics among your people will try to force the end and they're going to fail. V'chiyesh michshol gadol mizeh, shekol ha-neviyim dibru sh'amashiach goel Yisrael, u'moshiyem, u'mikabetz nidreihem, u'mechazek mitzvatan, v'zeh, meaning Jesus, garam la'abed Yisrael b'cherev, u'lufazer she'eritam, u'lhashpilam, to humiliate them, u'lachlif ha-Torah, u'lahat'ot rov ha'olam la'avod Eloha mi'biladei Hashem. There's the definition of Avodah Zarah, to worship as God someone outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Aval machshavot borei olam ein koch badam la'asigem, Kilo darachenu darachav, lo machshavotenu machshavotav. V'chol advarim ha'elu sheyeshua hanotzri v'shel zeh hayishme'eli. Notice, he can mention Jesus, but he's writing in Cairo, he's got to be a little bit more circumspect. He talks about hayishme'eli. Shamar acharav einan ela liyasher derech lemelech ha-mashiach. Ulitaken et ha'olam kulo la'avod et Hashem biyachad. Shenemar ki az in the day of Moshe Mashiach, efoch elamim safa brura, lekro kulam b'shem Hashem ulavdo shem echad. How does that work? Ketza, kvar nitmale ha'olam kulo midivrei ha'mashiach, midivrei ha'torah, midivrei ha'mitzvot, upashtu devarim elu biyim rechokim ubamim rabim orlei lev. V'hem nosim v'notnim badvarim ele uv'mitzvot ha'torah. You want to talk about the Jewish, Judeo-Christian tradition? There's nothing Judeo-Christian with Judeo-Christian tradition. What's Jewish is Jewish, what's Christian is Christian. But the Judaism is a substratum both for Christianity and for Islam. So they're in the Parsha, as it were. Elu omrim mitzvot elu emet hayu ukvar batlu bizman hazeh. He's quoting one line in Islam. We'll talk about this next week, I hope. That the Torah was valid, but then became nullified with the later revelation. That's a doctrine called Nasr, that with Muhammad bringing the Quran, that all previous revelations are mitpatel. Velo ayu no agot ledorot ve'eluram, the Christians dvarim shnistarot yesh bahen. We saw this. Einam kshutan ukvar b'shiba mashiach v'gilan nistarihem. The secret spiritualization of the mitzvahs, they're all symbols, and the salvation is spiritual, they're not physical, and it's Israel of the spirit and not Israel of the flesh, and so on. Ukishiyamod amelach mashiach be'emet v'yatzliach v'yarum v'yinasei miyad hem kulam chuzrim v'yodim shisheker nachalu avoteihem v'shinivyehem v'avoteihem hitu. So both religions have a positive role in advancing the realization of the messianic vision. Okay, so the Rambam at least leaves that. Interestingly, because Jesus is mentioned, it's not 100% positive, but it got cut. It was only restored, this passage was only restored to the Rambam in the 60s, in the Rambam La'am, if you remember the brown books, with the Rambam, with the commentary on the bottom, and now I'm sure there's one here, in the Shabtai Frankel read Rambam. It's there as part of the text. Okay, that's in the Muslim world. Poskim in the Dota Mizrach, Christianity is about Azara, goodbye. There's nothing to talk about. In Christian countries, things got a little bit different. Let's look at number three. This is the mission I mentioned to you. Lifnei edeihem shel ovdei kochavim shlosha yamim, אסור לשאת ולתת עמהם, להשילן ולשאול מהם, להלוותן וללוות מהם, לפורן ולפורן מהם. No business relations at all. And the Gemara says it's either because you may be facilitating Avodah Zarah and that's your Isser, or maybe it's Lifnei Iver, whatever. Anything which will get the non-Jew to go worship Avodah Zarah. By the way, when you start having it's not like my mother, it's a Chanav Racha. She used to set the table for Thanksgiving on Sunday. But generally, you start making a party a few days before. So that's the range of days that no joke, and you couldn't go into the dining room. I mean, this was like serious, serious stuff.
Kids go crazy if I set the table for. On Thursday night, because that's one thing more out of the way.
This year I started cooking. I started cooking for the Chagim like a week before Rosh Hashanah, and it was like that way there were no crazy Erev Yontifs, and I think I finally made my point to the rest of the family who believe. I mean, I'm a big believer in the last minute also, but actually there's a plus. Anyways, look in Tosfos. Tosfos says the following: Also laseid v'latetim in Miami, you can't do any business with them. Perish HaKuntris, Rashi says, Mishum da'azel biyomedo, because he'll go on his holiday, u'model avodas kochavim, and he'll go thank the Avodah Zarah, and whatever the Yisr is, it's Yisr. Now understand one thing that's shifted. Up when the Jews lived in the Middle East, they were pagans, they were Mazdians, all kinds of, you didn't have to do business with God, with Christians. And there were huge Jewish collectives where you could actually go, not have to go out of, you know, the Jewish neighborhood in Matamaxia, you could make a nice living just with Jews. I mean, they probably, you know, pay my yumotzim l'chatan shama, but you didn't have to. You didn't have to handle with goyim. Jews in Christian Europe, they're teeny tiny communities. There were never more than 30,000-40,000 Jews in Europe. If there were hundreds of thousands of Jews, they were all among Edot Mizrach. Okay, so Jews are totally dependent upon Christians for their livelihood. And the only reason they're there is because they were invited or tolerated or given rights by the feudal authorities because of the fact that among the things they can do is business, and they can do international trade, because only Jews are able to cross from the Christian world to the Muslim world and make it all the way to China. How did Jews get to China? Because you have stations of communities going all the way to China and to India to bring back whatever it is, silk and all kinds of stuff like that. And it was an international system, because by this time everybody follows the Gemara. So a Jew from Cairo and a Jew from France can have a din Torah in Samarkand and get the same, more or less, same psak that they would get in their homes. It was an amazing system. By the way, they probably spoke Hebrew to each other also. So to say that Hebrew was a totally dead language as a spoken language is not true. It sounded like, I remember I was a kid, there was a guy who was the president of the shul in the summer place we used to go to. who, you know, heard me speaking Hebrew with somebody, and he started talking Hebrew, but what he learned, cheder, Dorton, and I don't know, Poland, in biblical Va'omalo, you know, Vayemer, whatever it is, but they were able to function. Okay? So he said that this, you see from this that, you know, you can't, this is the reason you're not allowed to do business. Shirat Salomar Afi Memka, that includes trade. Vikasha. That's difficult. Alma Samchu Ha'olam Laseit Vilateit Biyom Eidako Avaro Kechavim. Everybody does business. Not only 3 days before, but on Sunday. Whose stores are open on Christmas? Hello. Right? Either Greek Orthodox, because their Christmas is a week later, or Jews. How do they do that? Now, by the way, notice, Almas Samchu Ha'olam, they must, there's an assumption about the religious probity of the Jews, mm-hmm. that there must be some, raya. They must have got a psak, there must have been some raya, there must be some basis to their minhag, but it's problematic. So now Tosfos raises a bunch of different possibilities. Nehe derove deha minakdeshim heim. It's true, most of their holidays are saints' festivals, and they don't attribute divinity to the saints. By the way, notice that they call them not Kedoshim, but Kedeshim. Because in general, part of the anti-Christian polemic, or part of the response of Jews to polemic, or to Bittul Avodah Zarah, is to take something positive and invert it. So a Beit Tfilah of a Christian is a Beit Tiflah. Mm-hmm. Priests are not Doresh, they're Noveach, like dogs. They don't have Kedoshim, they have Kedeshim. The Mei HaTvila, which were scented, are Mei Tzachana, they're putrid. By the way, if anybody took you don't have to say yes or no, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. If you've ever been in a Catholic church, or near a Catholic church, you know how dense the air is with incense. It's very, very, it's a different smell, it's a different dimension. Okay, anyways. So you can understand how a Jew would have like a really physical response to this. In any ways, even though most of their holidays are saints' days, like Sylvester, mikol makom, nevertheless, b'chol shavua yom echad yesh lehem til Rabbi Yishmael la'olam asur. And we paskin that way. Sunday is so you shouldn't do business Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. We're not open anyways. Never mind Sunday. So that's a problem. Ve'ein lomar, and you can't say dehainu taima that the reason why they do it. The Ovdei Kochavim b'shebechutz la'aretz lav Ovdei Kochavim ela min hagavoteim b'yadehem, that they're not that frum, that Ovdei Avodah Zarah in chutz la'aretz are not that frum, and therefore there's no issur. They just do what's by rote. And by the way, this may be a statement. This was there obviously refers to Sassanid Persia, but the level of Christian sophistication of the average Christian in the 11th, 12th, 13th century wasn't, b'shamayim. The Ha'amar Shmuel b'Gemara b'Gola ino asur ele yom edam bilvad. He says, okay, that statement that they're not that frum only serves to lower that the first three-day rule doesn't apply. Mashma ha'yom edam mia asur. But Sunday Jews are doing business. They're opening the stores. My father-in-law, that's where he made most of his business, was he opened on, say, it was worth
that
it.
That was in America, not in Europe.
Right.
You couldn't open in Europe.
Right, but he used to pay the fine or pay off the cop, and then that
way. What state was that?
New York. Brooklyn, Yerach HaKodesh, Hagen Alei Elohim. Right, so you paid off or you paid the fine, and it was worth it because you did more business on Sunday than you did the rest of the week. Okay, so what's the reason? L'chach nireh deshari mishum eva. He says, the only reason I can come up with is hostility. Meaning, that if I don't do business with them, they will hurt me. In other words, pikuach nefesh doesn't trump avodah zarah. But to trump, doesn't override avodah zarah. But it does override a rabbinic enactment that was put into place, because maybe that will lead the goy to do a avodah zarah. That, yes. Those are circumstances.
But anytime you do any kind of business with a Christian, you're helping him support himself, which includes any day of the week.
Right.
helping him toward
avoiding
what he needs for his...
Correct, and your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. And
but the pikuach nefesh issue is, oh, you're not doing business with me because I'm a Christian. That would be much, much worse. That would be sakana.
Okay. We haven't got time to go through all of this. Then he raises a question why that explanation is not so good. And then he says, L'chach nira detam aheter, the reason why it's mutter, mishum da'akum shebeinenu kimlan begavayu delo palchi lavodes kochavim. We know they don't worship, we don't worship idols. They don't worship lavodes kochavim. Nobody knows what that means. They're not sophisticated. They think, in other words, as if to say the avodah zara that the contemporary Christians do is avodah zara, 98% avodah zara, 97% avodah zara. It's something. It's not 100%. Now that would be, it's enough avodah zara to die for, lest you do it for a Jew. But it's enough to say it's not, you know, it's not really 100%. We don't know what that means. We'll see in a minute what that might mean. But and then Rabbi Tom says, "Nah, it's the whole business is not a problem because the Mishnah only refers to selling religious items, selling them things that they'll use in their service, and that's it. Everything else is okay." By the way, as we all know, who's been to Rome? Okay, if you've been to Rome, you know that all the guys in the little stands around the Vatican selling rosary beads and little getchkes and all kinds of stuff, they're all Jews. And they bequeathed their place on the thing to their children. This is going on for a long time already. In fact, I remember the first time I was in Rome. It was before Shoshana, and we were standing in line every church. You have see a yarmulke, Shana Tova. There's a guy surrounded by crucifixes, Shana Tova. Guy comes up to me, he says, Opaura il ganavim. You have to be careful of ganavim. I asked one guy, I said, you're here every day? So he said, yeah, except for Kippur. Yom Kippur, they're not there. So I was standing with my wife, going to see the Sistine Chapel, and I started to laugh. And she said, what's the matter? It struck me. The papal public audience is every Wednesday. What of all the holidays could fall on Wednesday? Yom Kippur. It fell on Yom Kippur Wednesday this year. Because you can't, because Alo Adu Rosh Alo Bedu Pesach, Rosh Hashanah can't fall on Sunday. So Rosh Hashanah always falls, it falls on Monday, Tuesday. So Yom Kippur falls on Wednesday. So I'm sitting there thinking, wow, there are years when a Christian comes all the way to Rome and he wants to buy some kind of religious article that the Pope will bless, and he's going to have a hell of a time trying to find a guy to sell it to him because all the guys who sell it are in shul. I mean, you gotta think. It's
maybe
like
they hire a non-Jew to work for them if it falls out.
These are very shrewd guys. I have no doubt that they find a way. But in any case, so Toshri, now this is clear where economics and self-image and all kinds of things come together. But Tosis is clearly not happy with this circumstance. But they say that some halacha, you can cobble together some kind of something. And in there is this idea that Christianity is somehow less of an intensive avodah zarah than the avodah zarah, the chazal in the Bible were screaming about. Okay? Number four. More importantly is number four. Number four tells the following story. Amar Rabu de Shmuel, Gemara in Bukhoras. The father of Shmuel, so this is the second half of the second century BCE, Asur la Adam shi yaseh shutafut ima ove kochavim. You can't go into business with a guy. Shema yitchayev lo shvua, because ultimately partners fight. And one's going to scream at the other one that you stole it from me. In this case, the Jew will accuse the guy. Then he's and how did they used to? If there's no proof, how do you solve the problem? You take an oath. You know, we live in a world in which the spoken word is really cheapened. But up until the modern era, oaths and vows were a central part of religious life. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, second chelik of Yerideya, this much of that chelik is taken up by Nedarim and Shavuos. You look in Shuvas, questions about vows and oaths are constant. And when you take an oath, you hold a Sefer Torah, or you hold a pair of tefillin, and Bavon Nedarim Banim Metim, it's a serious, serious business. so that, and it's a religious act. You're invoking your soul. By the way, and do you remember the movie Man for All Seasons with Sir Thomas More?
Yeah.
So in that movie, he wouldn't take the oath of supremacy because and when his daughter says, "But all you're saying is words in your heart, you'll know you don't mean it." And Sir Thomas More basically what was the guy's name?
Was the actor?
Yeah, the actor.
Oh.
I'll think of it in a minute. Says
what?
He passed away not long ago. It says to what's an oath if not words we say before God? That's an oath. That's serious. So if I cause a non-Jew to take an oath, religious oath, I am causing avodah zarah. V'nishbalo b'shem avodah zarah shelo v'Torah amra lo yishama alpicha. You should not cause avodah zarah to be invoked in an oath. That is, it's not a matter of you're causing him. It's your act of avodah zarah that you're incurring. It's if you did it. Okay, so oaths are the basis of proof in court in the Middle Ages too, not just the ancient period. So we have a tshuva of Rashi. Pam achat nitchayev goy shvur l'Rashi Rabbeinu. Rashi was in business with a non-Jew, and he said the goy owed him money, and the goy said no, which would have meant he would have had to take an oath. And Rashi didn't want to cause him to do an oath. He knew the Gemara and Pechoris very well. So what did he do? Holicho et pitcha stavor zara, kilu hu rotze lashpio. He brought him, he says, "I'll meet you in front of the cathedral in Troyes." Figuring as if he wanted to tell him to take an oath in front of the cathedral. Avalo haya bilibo lahashpio. He didn't really intend to have him take an oath. Sharei amru chachamim asur lo sheyaseh shutafutim agoy, shemen nitchayev agoy shvua, v'nishba avodah zarah shelo, v'Torah amra lo yoshim al picha. Aval mareh haya kedei sheyodeh. He indicated he wanted to admit the oath of money, idea being he's not going to lie in front of the cathedral. Right? Rashi at this point was totally a shlemazel. V'heviu rekev atzamot ha-kedeshim. At just at that moment, they brought out to show the crowd the remains of the relics of the saint whose bones were in the cathedral in Troyes, which is still there. And the goy got all excited. V'niach ha-goy alei ha-prutan. He put a coin on top of it and he swore that he didn't owe him money. L'klon avodah zarah, meaning l'chvod avodah zarah. And Rebbe v'natan lo zman shvuato. Rashi turned blue. Okay, meoto zman va'elach. From that moment on, kibel Rabbeinu alav shelo yisav yitain imagoy be'emunah davar gadol b'shebeino. He said, "I'm not doing big business with a guy orally, which can only be adjudicated by oath. Everything's got to be written." Shema hagoy lo yamino kideshi leinich goy. Okay, then. He can be appeased himself. Okay? So what is Rashi's position on avodah zarah, on Christianity? Avodah zarah. He applies without any hesitation the Gemara in Bukharos to Christianity. So in the 11th century, no question, Christianity is still avodah zarah. They're trying to 3 days before, okay, they start playing around. But if it's something you can control, it's the Zara, and it's certainly understandable because Rashi is a contemporary of the First Crusade.
And how was he in a partnership with the guy?
Maybe it wasn't a partnership. Maybe just a business. Maybe he sold him something. Rashi was not a
winery.
Rashi was not a vintner. Oh. Rashi did not raise grapes. Rashi was probably a businessman. For Soloveitchik suggested at one point that maybe he was an egg salesman. What happened is like this: the area around. Why do you think Rashi was a vintner? Because Rashi has a tshuva in which he says, "I couldn't write back to you because I'm busy making wine. You know I'm busy, I am with the wine, and therefore I didn't have time to write back to you." However, for Soloveitchik checked, in the area of Troyes, around where Rashi lived, the soil is specifically non-friendly to vines. And industrial winemaking, which was like the steel industry, was a major industry in the Middle Ages, and Jews made most of their money from it. In fact, all the money which they later apparently put into money lending, they made in dealing in wine, because there wasn't. That's what people drank. There was no soda, there was no Coke, there was no nothing. People were drinking amazing amounts. I'll give you an example. One monastery in England where when they wanted to cut the daily ration of wine for the monks from I think it was 13 leaders to 12 or 11, there was a riot in the leaders.
Leaders.
You're talking, how many? So it's 3, 6, 9. A 6-pack of Cola Zero is 9 liters. Okay, so you drink all that, and that's all wine. And then you add another 2 bottles. That's what everybody got on a daily basis.
Okay, but how strong was this wine, et cetera?
No, how do you even drink
diluted?
That much by the taste?
That's a good question. So, but Rashi apparently, but in that area they did not, people didn't make iron for a living, but because of the state of halacha at the time, you had to make, the feeling was you couldn't have any, Gentiles were not allowed to use, you weren't allowed to use Gentile labor even in the harvesting of grapes for your own purpose. So everybody make, like my bubby made raisin wine, everybody would make the wine for their entire year, which is a very labor intensive thing. And the entire period of winemaking and pressing and stuff like that was the time of the chagim. So in other words, you had all the chagim and you had to make wine for a year at this exact same time. When you consider that, you have 2 days Rosh Hashanah, you have an Erev Rosh Hashanah, then Arvei Chagim, then you have 2 days Rosh Hashanah, then you have Erev Yom Kippur and Yom Kippur, then you have Sukkot. And Rashi's position was, by the way, you can't do Malacha on Chol HaMoed, it's from the Torah, and you have to make wine for the entire year. You begin to realize that Rashi was very busy, that's why he couldn't answer this letter. That's, by the way, why, if you pay attention, if in Shul, when you say the Mishnah Berach, for the kehilah, misha notnim yiner lamaor v'yayin lekidush lahavdala, because they were both very expensive businesses. Candles are also a labor-intensive thing, because you're not talking about candles you go and buy paraffin. You take a stick and you have the person with the wick and you go like this. Okay, so till you make a stalwa, and people used to, I talked about this in Shul on Yom Kippur. People used to bring candles as votive offerings to the shul. Yeshuvnikim that lived out of town, that was the gift, until the point where Poposkim in the Middle Ages said, well, can we sell the candles to pay for other things for the community, because we're too many candles. But that was a major donation. Okay, in any event, Rashi may have just, the guy owed him money, whatever it was, he bought something. It doesn't really matter. Okay. Well, no, now candles say you can't get away with giving candles for that's then. Okay. Well, even if buy those pre-made Hanukkah oil things, what it costs, 80 shekel for the park, 75 shekel. Okay. Tosfos makes the following observation. You can't make, you should not be, go into partnership with a non-Jew, because you don't want to get involved with oaths from the non-Jew. Mikan oser Rabbeinu Shmuel kabbalat hatshuva hashvua mikal v'chomer. Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, who generally follows the Zayda exactly what he said, you can't accept this. No way you can accept this this oath. It's about Zara. Goodbye. What's the kal v'chomer is not for now. His younger brother, however, said, Rabbeinu Tam matir, to go into business, mipneshu kimatzil miadam, because if in Avodah Zarah in general, in Masechta Avodah Zarah in general, if a goy owes money to a Jew and you can possibly get it out of him and save it from being lost to the community, you're allowed to do it under certain circumstances. Let's leave that. Let's put it aside. Skip down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. 5 words in from the end. Od perish Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam also said, Bizman hazeh, nowadays, kulan nishbaim bakdeshim. When they swear, they don't swear by Jesus, they swear in the name of all the saints. And if you had Irish friends as kids, by Mary and all the saints. It was always like a normal thing to say. Ve'ein tofsim bahen elohut, and they don't attribute divinity to the saints. Ve'af al pi shemazkiri mimahem, with the saints shem shamayim. They mention Dio, whatever, and so on. V'kavanatam lidavar acher, and they got something else in mind. Mikol makom ein ze shem avodat kochavim. That is not, saying God, Deus, is not an idolatrous name, because they also have in mind, l'shem oseh shemayim v'aretz, the Rabbeinu Shlomo. V'af al gav shemishtatev shem shamayim v'davar acher. Even though, let's say, in their heads, they're combining God's name with somebody else, Jesus, perhaps. Okay, there's no problem causing a non-Jew to have the wrong intention, because that's not part of their Isra Avodah Zarah. Now there are two ways of interpreting this Tosfos. One is that there are a number of ways of interpreting this Tosfos. One is that it's just a separate business with regard to Shavua, that under those circumstances, a Shavua that doesn't mention Jesus explicitly, but the guy has it in mind, that's not your problem. Okay. There's another way of explaining it, which was the one that actually got more chin. Look in the next passage. It's from Rabbeinu Yerucham, which is a Provençal code from the early 14th century, which preserves a non-censored version of our Tosfos. Asur la'asot shutafut im hagoy. Okay, you know, he does the same thing. Third line in the middle. Rabbeinu Tam katav. Rabbeinu Tam says, shemutal lekabla mimenu. You're allowed to accept the shvur from this partner. Kevin shenishtatefi mokvar. If you're already in the partnership, shelo yafsid mamono, because you're not supposed to. You don't have to lose money on this question of causing. In other words, for whatever reason, you don't have to lose money on this. V'chein nira ikar, and that seems to be the major reason. V'chein katav arosh shemutar. The rosh also passes like that, and goodbye. V'katav ri. In other words, Rabbeinu Tam's nephew ri hazaken. So the second opinion in Tosfos is not Rabbeinu Tam; it's ri. Kiyesh heter achad bizman hazeh. The truth of the matter is, heter achad. There's another reason. Ki nishba'im b'kdeshim shalehem. They swear by their saints. Hanikra avon gilyon, they're holding the evangelist. They're holding the New Testament. Here's it has avon gilyon means the good news. That's gutespiel gospel. But the Hebrew turns it into the sin of the book. The ain't of sin b'hen elohut. Proper. It's not your iser because they didn't say the Avodah Zarah, and it's not their iser because they can combine things. Based on this Rabbeinu Yerucham, there are those who interpreted to say, as if to say, that the degree, we learned that interpret this to say that the degree of pure monotheism required of a Ben Noach is less than that required of a Jew. In other words, a Ben Noach is Aser b'Avodah Zarah. It's one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Okay. However, it's possible since the Christians worship the one God that a Trinitarian mode of monotheism may not be in violation. It's a violation of our monotheism, but it may not be a violation of the criteria of monotheism for a non-Jew. In other words, Christianity is understood to mean Christianity might not be a Avodah Zarah for a Ben Noach, but it is for a Jew.
Wait, so what does that leave you in terms of doing this?
Oh, so that's the case. It's not a problem because if they don't mention
it,
right, so he's not the problem. So if he's not mentioning Jesus and it might be a religious Trinitarian moment for him, what do you care? It's not your problem. Mm-hmm. That's the way this is commonly understood. Now, you could interpret this as saying it's just a din, it's just some rule in the vows, but Rabbeinu Yerucham is a bit more expansive, and you could argue that it's not Avodah Zarah for non-Jews. Okay. Professor Berger calls it non-monotheistic Avodah Zarah. Non-idolatrous Avodah Zarah in a monotheistic mode.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, do that three times fast. Okay, in any event, by the way, I'm doing this. We can talk about this forever, and in fact, he actually has a very good, Professor Berger, on why you talk, it was a long discussion, which he lays this out much more extensively. The point is that over time, This is something Yaakov Katz pointed out many years ago, that over time you develop a sort of idea that Christianity, it's not the old time of Avodah Zarah that the Chazal were so adamant about. And over time, therefore, there was sort of the sense that it's not a mitzvah, it's not Avodah Zarah of the Canaanites, but it's also, as far as B'nai Noach are concerned, there is sort of it fits the criteria of B'nai Noach, and maybe they have Chayelok Lolam Haba. Now, that doesn't mean that there was love between Jews and Christians.
The change came about over
a long period of time, partly because the words themselves here took on a life of their own, and generation after generation sort of came to think that maybe it's not Avodah Zarah for Ben Noach. In addition, Katz argues that it had a lot of sway during the ghetto age, when the sense of being oppressed or constantly by the Christians sort of fell off, and therefore your back was less up, and therefore there's more room for being expansive and maybe tolerant. Ironically, by the way, when the Jews were in the ghetto, the Christian imagination went crazy, and the diabolization of the Jew went in to the extreme. There are statements that were made by when the Talmud was put on trial in 1240 in Paris. Rabbeinu Yochiel Paris reputed, well, actually, it's pretty clear that's true. Said to the king that all of the negative things about Goyim in the Torah refer to the Canaanite nations, they refer to you because we know that you worship God. So all of that together kind of softened the sense of Christianity, not vis-a-vis Jews again, but vis-a-vis the Christians themselves. That doesn't, as I said, that doesn't mean that there wasn't a lot of hostility. Take a look at number 5. This is from this one line from one of the Crusader Chronicles. The Jews are yelling at the Christians who are coming up to kill them or force convert them. Vayamdu kulam ish v'ishav ishchatu zeh lazeh v'abtulot v'kalot v'chatanim hibitu barach halonot v'tzaku b'kol gadol habitu rei alokeinu ma'anu osim al kiddushim cha agadol b'lila hamir otcha b'talui nitzlav netzir nischav v'netav v'mishukatz b'doro b'mzeru ben anidao ben azima. The gum the gum. You can't say Jesus' name, but formally speaking, there's room. The one individual who sort of took it one step further, and that's, I really don't have time to talk about this, and he was not normative. His opinion did not have much. He's the Rishon that all Jews who live in open liberal Christian countries love is the Meiri. The Meiri took things one step forward, and he said anti-pagan legislation in the Talmud doesn't apply to contemporary Christians because they have moral religions. For example, Shor shel Yisrael shenagach shor shel Nochri patur mibin reyehu v'shel Nochri shenagach shel Yisrael pen tam ben muad mishalem nezek shalem. You heard the God, okay? It's not a happy din. Ulefima shenemar b'gemara davka b'amamim sheinam gidurim b'darchei datot v'nimusim. So that refers to those who accept Sheva Mitzvot Noach. Those who do, we treat them equally. We don't prefer ourselves, we don't give ourselves preferential treatment in court. Which is Christians, they have morals, they have this, they have that. So he has sort of like a very sort of elegant one principle thing which separates contemporary Christians and Muslims from ancient pagans. The question is, I should can drink their wine. Mm-hmm. They can make bread for you. You can marry them.
Wait, why you are saying that? That's the question. This already solves. If you want to go by the Meiri, this solves a huge problem. Is there a problem of wine and?
So he said. So the Meiri said. So Katz pointed out. Katz pointed out that he only invokes this rule when you're talking about trying to justify Jewish Christian interactions on a legal, on a, whatever. But if it comes to social restrictions, no. Now, there's a professor in Hebrew who argues that, in fact, according to the Meiri, there's really not a problem with even conversion. I think that he's totally wrong. I think that he really overreads the Meiri. I have a friend, Professor Glenn Gary Stern, who is been called the GLAM, the greatest living authority on the Meiri, and Greg Stern, rather, sorry. And he has told me more in no uncertain terms the Meiri did not take it that far. But the formulation is still a lot more, less begrudging and more open than we ever have. By the way, another thing which advances this idea that, you know, that the Christians are not quite here, but they're also not quite there. When you repeat something enough, so it sort of takes hold. So Jewish books were censored from almost the very beginning in Christian Europe, especially Catholic Europe. And in order to be able to get things published, you had to start the book with some kind of announcement, because if you're talking about halacha books generally, goyim have a place therein. So this is a accessible. The 1776 edition of a chuvas of Rabbi Yomin Shkolnik from the 16th century called Maseit Binyamin. And at the beginning of the book, you find the following: Modar Rabbi Lachola Koreba Sefer Zek Kikol Makom Shizacher Bo Shem Akum Nochri or Vodazara Hakol. Ne'emar ba'umot hakdumot shelo hayu ma'aminim ba'boreit barech u'bashkachato, providence, kemuzkar ba'rambam, b'sifro, zeh u'vegam ba'mor nevuchim, chele gimel, perek kavtet, ve'ein ze nogeh legamre, ela amim b'zman hazeh, asher anachnu yoshvim tachtam, ad rabba aleyem amru chazal, hevei mitpalel b'shloma shel malchut, ve'lokei ha'shalom yivarcheinu b'shalom. You say it enough. Okay. So again... Is there hostility? Yes. Is there contempt on our part? Certainly, but justifiably. On the other hand, you do have this formal position, which is now the norm, in which Christianity is not a avodah zarah for Ben Noach, is an avodah zarah for Jew. Islam, we'll see, is a totally different ballgame.